by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to have a really interesting program. Little Mike Lindell mixed in with Josh Hawley. Laura Ingram interview of Hawley. We're going to cover this counteroffensive in the Ukraine and what are Putin's next moves. Sky News and Jay Dyer. We're going to end with Jay Dyer about the British system of power and geopolitical might and power over the centuries, if not more than decades into the centuries. But anyway, first we're going to play an interview that Alex had with Mike Lindell, and we're going to follow that by some attorneys that are giving us the cost involved and what the hospitals are charging for COVID patients. And it's astronomical what's going on. It's really money driven. But first, this is Mike Lindell, and he was recently detained by the FBI, and his smartphone, where he runs everything out of his company's Mr. Pillow, My Pillow Man, and they confiscated his cell phone, his smartphone. But first, here's that story related to us by Mike Lindell. Here we go. He's a good guy, fine person.
Well, I'll just tell you, if you want, I'll break the news right now to your audience. This morning, after all this happened, and we can replay what happened or re-talk about what happened, I was on my phone with some of the best lawyers I have, which is Alan Dershowitz, Kurt Olson, Andrew Parker. We were on the phone for 2.5 hours this morning. I said, I want to be on the offense. What can we do here? This is insanity that they take my company phone that runs all these businesses and all my passwords. I can't do money wires, anything, because the passwords are on that phone. And here it is, everybody. We're suing the United States government. I'm suing them and the FBI. This is it broke my First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights, constitutional rights. We're not going to stand for it in this country. They don't get to act like the Gestapo in Nazi Germany.
All right. 2 days ago, he was on a hunting trip early in the morning, stopped in to get breakfast at a Hardee's, and a bunch of FBI vehicles surrounded him. He's told that story. I'll recap, but he's got breaking news now on what's happening. He's being investigated for investigating election fraud. But I saw all these news of them finding stolen voting machines. The FBI wouldn't even come look at it. I guess if he was human smuggling across the border or shipping in fentanyl or doing a drag queen story time, it'd be okay. But because Mike Lindell's trying to have integrity and investigate election fraud, he is persona non grata. Because after all, Biden says the main terror threat is people questioning elections or lockdowns or forced inoculations or open borders. So what a time to be alive. Mike Lindell, obviously icon from MyPillow.com and all the great work he's done promoting American freedom and liberty. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Alex. Yeah, it's been quite a couple of days, but I'll tell you, everybody, there's a good silver lining here. Actually, Tucker talked about the machines the last two nights on Fox. Newsmax actually had me on, and Salem Media talked. So our conservative media that I've been bad-mouthing for over a year now, or over a year and a half, that won't have our voice when it comes to these machines getting rid of them, or this election crime, the biggest crime in history, is finally getting talked about. And I did over 56 interviews the last 2 days. So the word is getting out where they were trying to suppress the word. And that is the silver lining.
So there's a big backfire that's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, if you want, I'll break the news right now to your audience. This morning, after all this happened, and we can replay what happened or re-talk about what happened, I was on my phone with some of the best lawyers I have, which is Alan Dershowitz, Kurt Olson, Andrew Parker. We were on the phone for 2.5 hours this morning. I said, I want to be on the offense. What can we do here? This is insanity that they take my company phone that runs all these businesses and all my passwords. I can't do money wires, anything, because the passwords are on that phone. And here it is, everybody. We're suing the United States government. I'm suing them and the FBI. This is, they broke my First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights, constitutional rights. We're not going to stand for in this country. They don't get to act like the Gestapo in Nazi Germany. Yeah, you know, Alex, when I told them, I mean, why don't you just come and bash my door down like you did all the people in Colorado, like Sharona Bishop? One of the FBIs from Colorado said, well, Sharona didn't open her door fast enough. I said, oh, 42 seconds wasn't fast enough for you, huh? So if you get your door bashed in, if the FBI knocks on your door, make sure that you do it under, that you answer the door under 41 seconds, or you're going to be paying for a whole new door on top of the FBI invading your privacy and attacking your family.
Well, the FBI already has been discredited, and it's not just the higher-ups now. It's throughout the structure. They've got special political units like the Commissars in Russia that come after people. They have just destroyed any credibility they've got. They are nothing but a deep state tool now.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell us more about the details of the raid, and now they're saying computer crimes, computer theft.
Yeah, here's what happened, everybody. So I'm heading down, got up at 4 in the morning, my buddy and I headed down to Iowa, where I live in Minnesota. It's about a 2.5 hour drive. It was the early duck season, teal. And we get 9 teal. Our limit, it would be 12 between the two of us. And I said, hey, I got to get back. I have this new platform, mystore.com, for all these USA products and these entrepreneurs. I was doing filming with a bunch of them that day. And I said, let's get going. And so we left early. We get into Mankato, Minnesota. And I said, let's quick go through a drive-thru. And there was a Hardee's there, a Hardee's restaurant. We pulled in through the drive-thru, got our food. And she said, some of it wasn't ready. She said, can you pull ahead a little bit? I'll bring the rest of your food out. So I pull ahead a little bit with my pickup, and here this car pulls perpendicular right in front of us. And I said to my buddy, the guy's not looking at us. I said, this is weird. Something's going down. I actually said that. I mean, I've been around the block, okay? And this guy, another vehicle pulls up to his passenger side and locks us in there. And then I look in the rearview mirror, and one comes flying up the drive-thru and blocks us in from the back. It's like a scene right out of a movie. And I go, I told my friend, now he's, and like I said, hold on, these are bad people. I open up the door, and I yell loud enough for people to hear me in the parking lot and maybe inside the restaurant. I said, what do you guys want, and who are you? What do you want? I mean, these are just regular beat up cars, and they're not dressed. None of them had the FBI on or FBI thing on. And I said, he goes, we're with the FBI. And I said, I don't believe you. Show me your badges. And, the one guy says he showed me a badge, but I'm looking at it from afar. And I said, how about your badge? And he showed me his. And I said, you back there. I said, I still don't believe you, but I said, what do you want? He goes, well, he said, we want to talk to you. So we moved the cars apart. Or he moved the cars, and I pulled up over here, and they got me boxed in. All these agents get out. I guess it turns out they were from Colorado and Minnesota. And, they come up to, they kind of circle me in there, and I get out, and they says, I said, well, what questions you got? I said, am I being arrested? They said, no. I said, well, then what do you want? And I said, you've been tracking me? Then I got kind of mad. I go, what did you watch me go duck hunting this morning? I said, what is with you guys? They said, we want to ask you questions. And that's when I said, before we even got into it, I said, well, why don't you just bash my door in like you do all the other people? That's when they said the Sharona Bishop thing that we wouldn't have bashed hers in, but she took too long to answer. And then we started asking questions. The first question they asked Alex was, they go, you have evidence up on your platform, frankspeech.com. You have evidence of what's inside a Dominion machine. Where did you get that evidence? I said, hello. I said, what do you think I've been doing for the last year and a half? I said, that particular piece so came right off the internet. You could all watch it yourself. And I said, and then he goes, then he asked me, he says, you fly your plane all over and you land in all these different states. And I said, he goes, what do you do all that for? What are you doing? I said, well, first of all, that's none of your business. I said, you're tracking my plane too? He goes, well, yeah, your tail number, anybody can do that. And I go, well, let me tell you something. As long as you ask, I've been flying around this country visiting attorney generals, secretary of states, crooked secretary of states, actually. I only found one that's decent. And I said, and legislatures and people. And I said, to get rid of these electronic computers and voting machines. And then he went into another question. He goes, when did you first meet Tina Peters? And I go, at the cyber symposium, you guys already know that. I said, I flew in from all over our country, cyber experts and people, people from around the country, politicians and stuff. And then I said, oh, you must be talking about the Dennis Montgomery terabytes that I own now, which is sitting, by the way, everybody, in Nevada, that the government has a gag order on. As soon as that judge lifts that, all this stuff goes away. 32 terabytes of the whole election of November 3rd to November 6th. That's what I think they're afraid of. But he goes, and then I said to him, I said, is this about January 6th? And they go, no, it's not about January 6th. I said, well, do you have other FBI guys that can tell that committee? I've tried to tell that charade that I want to come there, even though I wasn't there on January 6th. I want to bring the evidence there. I said, it's disgusting what they're doing. And then Alex, I said, you guys, you little FBI guys, do you guys realize that you FBI guys did a report from January 6th on June 26th of 2021, everybody, almost over a year ago, they did a 6-month investigation into January 6th, and they said there's no collusion between Donald Trump and his supporters. That should have been it. But no, they put up this little January 6th charade, keep people in prison that haven't done anything, and it's disgusting. So this, you know, and then they finally go, well, we're going to take your phone. And I go, you ain't getting my phone. You're going to have to arrest me before you're getting my phone. And then it was a whole nother fiasco.
Hold on. This is riveting, important, historic stuff. Mike Lindell, this is the mass purge. Democrats from Hillary Clinton to members of Congress are on TV saying we've got to, quote, kill the MAGA movement. We've got to ban their speech. We've got to, these people are like dictators in third world countries like Venezuela. This is so dangerous. Mike Lindell from MyPillow.com and MyStore.com is our guest. Please stay with us. This guy's a real patriot. The best part about my job is getting to know all these authentic, genuine, salt-of-the-earth people like Mike Lindell. Like, I didn't even know Mike Lindell was a hunter. He's not like a lot of these fake conservatives that constantly show it on TV as some cred thing. I want to go duck hunting with Mike Lindell. I haven't been duck hunting in years. Used to do a lot of that. That's some great hunting up there where he's at. Arkansas is great as well. Many areas are great. Down by Houston is great. But so now they get to the point they want your phone, and you're saying you're going to have to arrest me. Please continue.
Yeah, they go, yeah, we got an order here to take your phone. I said, you're not taking my phone. I said, this is my company phone. It's the only phone I have. I said, I don't use a computer. I use this phone for everything. I track media, everything in real time. I said, I have passwords on here that have to do money wire. It runs my hearing aids. I have to have this for my hearing aids and everything else. And I said, for 5 different companies, my pillow, my store, Frank Speech, and my Lindell Recovery Network, to help addicts. Anyway, I'm arguing. He goes, no. And I said, you're going to have to arrest me. I said, if I don't give you the phone, will you arrest me? And he goes, no, we're taking your phone. And I said, well, what? And then he gives me these papers here where there's a warrant for my phone, a seizure warrant, a search and seizure, whatever it is. And I said, well, I don't believe that. I said, how do I know that's real? I said, I want to call my lawyer. And he says, no, you can't call a lawyer. And I said, what? I said, I am calling a lawyer. I'm not giving you this. And then I got very upset. And he goes, all right, go ahead and call your lawyer. So now I call my lawyer, and I get one of my lawyers on the phone. And he goes, the FBI guy tells him he has whatever he had for this search and seizure, this from a judge or whatever it was. And anyway, he goes, Mike, give him your phone. I said, it was one of these things where I'm hanging on my phone. I go, I'm not giving my phone. And, it'd be the last thing I would ever give up. Well, he talks me into it. My lawyer does say, give him the phone. And I'm going, okay. Well, then they give me this sheet, Alex. This is this one here. They give me this sheet, and I'm going to read it to people. The This is an official criminal investigation conducted by an agency of the United States and a federal grand jury in the District of Colorado. Now it goes on to say, we request that you do not disclose the existence of this subpoena for an indefinite period of time. Although the law does not require non-disclosure unless a court order is issued, we believe that the impact of you saying anything or disclosing could be detrimental to the investigation. I'm going, okay. Then it says, if you do not believe that you cannot comply with this request, in other words, keep your mouth shut, please notify the undersigned Assistant United States Attorney, Aaron Tietelbaum. And I said, okay, I'll notify old Aaron. Alex, I went on my show at 6 o'clock on Lindale TV at Frank's Beach, and I said, Aaron, if you're watching, I'm telling you now and letting you know, I'm telling the whole world what you're corrupted with the FBI and came after citizens and doing what you're doing to our country. So I went public, as you know, and then it went everywhere. So
there was an interview that Alex had with two attorneys that are taking on cases, COVID cases, and getting people out of hospitals, saving a lot of lives. Anyway, one of those attorneys set out some of the costs that are involved that the hospital is able to charge and the bonuses and the monies that they're collecting up for COVID patients. It's astronomical. It can go up to $490,000 per patient. But here we go with just a short clip of this attorney laying out what those costs are and what the hospital is making on these COVID cases.
Really premeditated, and it's been financially incentivized in ways that most people can't even believe. For example, in California, there are three categories of treatment for a hospital. You either treat somebody that has COVID as an outpatient, and if you do, then the average charge rate is about $3,200. Or you bring them in and you treat them as a non-complex inpatient, and then the average charge rate goes up to $111,000 and change. But if you treat them as a complex, and complex is defined as you've either intubated them or you've put them in the ICU, either one or both, now it becomes complex, and the average charge rate jumps up to $450,000 and change.
So this is a $400,000 death bounty.
Well, plus they get a 20% bump through Medicare if they offer remdesivir to the exclusion of any other remedy. If they don't give ivermectin, they have to exclude it. So they have to say remdesivir is your only hope. And if they do that, the government gives them 20% on the entire stay, which at $450,000 charge rate is another 90 grand roughly.
So this makes Vioxx blush.
The incentives are terrible. And if you'll remember, and you can play this back, listen to it. I'm going to put this particular clip up and embed it in my page, so you'll be able to hear the complete two attorneys laying out all the problems that they've had so far. But anyway, $490,000 is a lot of money. And they also said remdesivir is still being used and administered to the patients. And that has proven to be very deadly in most cases and very, very, very dangerous. But anyway, coming up next is Josh Hawley. And he's questioning the head of TikTok. And she's very evasive, and he's trying to ask her, do you have any Communist Party members working for TikTok? She said, well, we have some Chinese, you know, citizens work in China that are working for TikTok. And she's very, very evasive. So listen to this. It's a pretty good interview. And Josh Hawley, we've got two more clips of him, one with Laura Ingraham.
Senator Hawley, you're recognized for your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to all the witnesses for being here. Ms. Pappas, let me start with you. I have to say it's great to see you here today. I have repeatedly invited your company to testify before Congress. I invited them to testify to the Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Terrorism in November of 2019. I invited them to testify again in September of the following year. Both times we were stiffed. TikTok told me that they would set up a meeting with the CEO. They didn't want to testify in public, but they set up a meeting with the CEO after November 2019. They then canceled that meeting. So it's nice to see TikTok being willing to answer questions in public. It's a pleasant change. Let's dig into a few things, if we could, specifically about TikTok's links to the Chinese Communist Party. In response to a letter from some of my colleagues, TikTok claimed earlier this year that the company has never shared data, never, with the Chinese government. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And has never shared data with the Chinese Communist Party, is that correct?
We will never share data, period.
My question was in the past tense. Has TikTok ever shared data with the Chinese Communist Party?
We have never shared data with the Chinese government, correct.
With the Chinese Communist Party?
Yes, correct.
Do you have any, have you ever shared it with members, two members of the Chinese Communist Party?
We have said many times, Senator, that we do have Chinese engineers based in China. I don't think there's any platform up here that would be able to speak to what you're talking about in, as it relates to the political affiliation of an individual. But I'm happy to assure you that we are ensuring the access controls around our data as well as the storage of that data in the United States.
So I think you're telling me that there are TikTok employees or ByteDance employees who are members of the Chinese Communist Party? Is that to what I
No, I'm saying I wouldn't be able to verify that.
Oh, well, let me just ask you that affirmatively. Are there members of, are there TikTok employees or ByteDance employees who are members of the Chinese Communist Party?
Senator, I'm saying nobody that's sitting on this panel could tell you a political
I'm not interested about anybody's opinion. I'm asking you a factual question. Are there members of the Chinese Communist Party employed by TikTok and ByteDance, yes or no?
I wouldn't be able to tell you the political affiliation of any individual. What I can tell you is how much we're investing.
No, membership in the Communist Chinese Party is not exactly like membership in the Democrat Party. So I'm looking for an answer. You tell me you don't know? TikTok doesn't know.
Here's what I can tell you. I can tell you that our U.S. and Singapore leadership, there are no CCP members. I can tell you.
So you do know that, but you're telling me that you don't know if there are any members who are employed by TikTok or ByteDance, members of the Chinese Communist Party?
Senator, I am happy to share that we are putting access controls.
That's not my question. My question is, that's not my question. My question is, are there any TikTok employees or ByteDance members, members of the Chinese Communist Party? Yes or no?
Senator, I'm saying nobody could sit up here and give you that.
So you don't know? You're saying you don't know. You do know your leadership isn't, but you don't know about your employees. Is that your testimony?
I know that everyone who makes a strategic decision at this platform is not a member of the CCP.
A strategic
correct.
Decision. Okay. It's interesting. It's interesting to me that you're quite confident that anyone who can make a strategic decision, how many people is that?
It's our leadership team. So
number.
And again, the leadership team is based in the U.S. and Singapore. Our CEO is based in Singapore. He's not Chinese. Happy to go into the efforts that...
Would it surprise you to learn that Forbes magazine recently reported that at least 300 current TikTok or ByteDance employees were members of Chinese state media and affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party?
Again, we don't look at the political affiliations or can't speak to individuals, but what I can tell you is we're protecting the data in the United States.
Well, apparently, though, you do look at political affiliation because you're quite willing to sit here and tell me that no one who has strategic input or makes strategic decisions is a member of the Chinese Communist Party. So you do know very well, as a matter of fact. You just don't want to answer my other question.
We have thousands of people that work at the company, so I'm not going to vouch on the political affiliation of any particular individual.
Have you seen the videos of Chinese Communist Party members conducting training for TikTok and ByteDance employees in China? That's fake?
I do not know what you're referring to, but what I can tell you...
Has that happened?
Any decision...
Has that happened?
Sir, I just said that. I couldn't be able to tell you. I haven't seen it. I'm not sure what you're referring to, but I'm happy to follow up. But what
I'm sorry. Let's go back. Let's see if we can cut through the mumbo-jumbo. I'm asking you if the Chinese Communist Party has conducted training sessions ever for employees... A ByteDance or TikTok, yes or no?
Not for TikTok. TikTok, the app, does not operate in China. We are
You have employees in China. ByteDance has employees in China. Listen, we've been through this song and dance, so let's just skip that. I've heard it all before.
Senator, I appreciate
Answer my question. Yes or no, have they conducted training for ByteDance employees or TikTok employees?
I can speak on behalf of TikTok, and the answer is no.
No, that's interesting. Do any TikTok employees based in China have access to U.S. user data?
As we have publicly said, yes, we have engineers in China.
But none of them are members of the Chinese Communist Party.
We are working on the access controls to minimize that data
access. I've heard that. I frankly don't believe
any of it. Working with the United States and through the CFIUS.
Wait. So your testimony is that you do have TikTok employees based in China who do have access to U.S. user data, but you're confident that none of them are members of the Chinese Communist Party and have ever accessed it?
Anyone who has access to U.S. user data has and does so to perform daily duties. So if it is for the performance of site management, bug handling, but we have strict controls in terms of who and how our data is accessed. Furthermore,
and none of that's accessible to any member of the Chinese Communist Party. Is that your testimony?
We believe we have the strictest controls
out
there.
That's not my question. My question is, does anyone who have access to user data, are they members of the Chinese Communist Party?
I feel like I've answered your question.
You haven't, and I feel like you're avoiding it every opportunity. So let me give you another one, since you're on the record and indeed under oath.
Can I be as clear as...
I would welcome you being clear.
Okay, thank you.
Do any person who has access to U.S. user data, are they members of the Chinese Communist Party? Yes or no?
Let me be clear again.
Yes or no?
For our U.S. users, the data is stored and housed in the United States. We have access controls.
You're not answering my point. Let the record reflect you will not answer my question. Why not?
Any of that data, it's overseen by our U.S.-led security team.
That's not my question. That's not my question. My question is, does any employee who has access to U.S. user data, are they members of the Chinese Communist Party? You won't answer that question.
And again, as a global technology platform, there is no other company that could make that assertion either.
That sounds like a yes to me. I think that's news. You're familiar, I know, with this BuzzFeed article that says that leaked audio from more than 80 internal TikTok meetings, China-based employees at ByteDance have repeatedly accessed non-public data about U.S. TikTok users. Everything is seen in China, said a member of TikTok's Trust and Safety Department in a September 2021 meeting. In another September meeting, a director referred to one Beijing-based engineer as a master admin who has access to everything. These reports show data was accessed far more frequently and recently than previously reported. And your testimony is that this is false?
Correct.
All of this is false?
That is correct.
No, so there are...
that you just stated, there is no such thing as a master account at the company,
that's not what it says.
Period.
It says that someone is referred to as a master admin. Well, but you're telling me that China-based employees have never accessed non-public data of U.S. TikTok users?
No, we've already said on the record that we have Chinese employees who have accessed data.
Well, that's what this is saying. So you agree?
If you want to clarify on each individual statement, I'm saying that there is strict access controls around the data that is accessed in the United States that is overseen by our U.S.-led security team. We are working with Oracle.
That's not what this article says.
We disagree with the categorization in that article wholeheartedly.
Oh. Well, here's the point. I know there are other senators who want to ask questions. I think we're going to have a second round. What the truth appears to be, besides the fact that we can't get a straight answer on any of these questions, is that you have hundreds of employees with, it appears, access to U.S. user data that may very well be members of the Chinese Communist Party. You have no way to assure me that they don't have access to our citizens' data. And you won't answer my question in a straightforward way about whether a CCP member has ever gained access or not. I think, from my own point of view, that's a huge security problem.
Senator, if I may, we are one of the most highly scrutinized platforms. There have been many cybersecurity experts who have researched our platforms, including Citizen Lab, which is a leading academic research unit based in the University of Toronto, who have said, and I am happy to submit this for the record for the committee, that our research shows that there is no overt data transmission to the Chinese government by TikTok. TikTok's features and codes do not pose a threat to national security.
Wait a minute. Overt data transmission? Ms. Pappas, this isn't a hearing for you to testify at will. You're here to answer questions.
I'm providing you with information.
No, you're not. You're talking over me, and you're submitting information from who knows who funds this entity? Who knows who's behind it? Who knows what it contains? I don't know. What I do know is you won't give me straight answers to my questions, and the reason I think is pretty clear, because your company has a lot to hide. You're a walking security nightmare, and for every American who uses this app, I'm concerned.
Well, I tell you, very, very evasive, and that's your TikTok head right there, and Josh Hawley could barely get any answers from her. Next is Josh Hawley questioning the head of Facebook. And he finally got the head of Facebook to agree or to admit that, yeah, they talked to the White House and they talked to these other, these agencies, administration. They said, well, it was because of COVID-19. But, anyway, he finally did admit it, and Josh Hawley didn't have much to, in his conclusion, he said it was very dangerous. But here we go with Josh Hawley quizzing the Facebook chief.
Senator Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cox, I know that Facebook has said in the past that it's their position as a private company, you're not subject to the First Amendment. I assume that hasn't changed. Is that right?
That's correct, Senator.
But the United States government is subject to the First Amendment. I think we can probably all agree on. Hopefully we can. Hopefully that's still true in this country. Is it appropriate for Facebook to work with the United States government to avoid the First Amendment, help the U.S. government avoid the First Amendment?
Senator, we do think it is sometimes appropriate to be in contact with government and with government organizations.
To help them avoid the First Amendment?
Senator, I'm not sure what specifically you're referring to.
Mm. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think it's appropriate to work with the United States government to target private individual speech that is constitutionally protected?
Senator, I'm not aware of that.
Mm. Well, let me educate you. On July 16th, 2021, Facebook, an employee at Facebook wrote to the Department of Health and Human Services saying, and I quote, "I know our teams met today to better understand the scope of what the White House expects from us on misinformation going forward." On July 23rd, 2021, a Facebook employee thanked HHS, quote, "for taking the time to meet earlier today and wanted to make sure you saw the steps we just took this past week to adjust policies and what we are removing with respect to misinformation. This included," and I'm still quoting, "increasing the strength of our demotions for COVID and vaccine-related content." On April 7th, 2021, a Facebook employee thanked the CDC for responding to misinformation queries, and I quote, "we'll get moving now to be able to remove all but that one claim as soon as the announcement and authorization happens." On July 28th of this year, a Facebook employee reached out to CDC about, quote, "doing a monthly misinfo debunking meeting." The CD responded, "yes, we would love to do that." Sure they would. On July 20th, 2021, Clark Humphrey at the White House, who's digital director of the COVID-19 response team, emailed Dave Sumner at your company, among others, asking any way we can get this pulled down, and cited a specific Instagram account. Within 46 seconds, your company responded and said, "yep, on it." That sounds like what in the law we call a pattern and practice of meeting, coordinating, and colluding with the United States government to target particular speech that no one in any of these emails alleges is incitement, which would not be constitutionally protected. No one in any of these emails alleges it directly encourages violence, which would not be constitutionally protected. So it appears to all be constitutionally protected speech on, I might add, very politically sensitive topics that Facebook is directly working with the U.S. government to target and remove. Is that your company policy to do this kind of thing?
Senator, we were quite public about our cooperation with health organizations during the unprecedented time of COVID. We knew that people expected and wanted accurate information on our platform. We had conversations with the CDC, with the World Health Organization, and with other public health organizations, not just in the U.S., but abroad, in order to understand how to help make sure that folks weren't getting information that could cause imminent harm.
Fair enough. So you're saying that this was, in fact, company policy to have these kinds of meetings with HHS, with the CDC, with the White House directly, that you did engage in this behavior, and you think that it was entirely fine. Is that your testimony?
Senator, I do believe it's appropriate for companies like ours to be in consultation with public health organizations and with government.
And you can confirm that things like taking down a private Instagram account and adjusting your policies at the behest of the White House, and putting into place misinformation policies at the behest of CDC, that those things you think are appropriate. This was company policy to do so. Is that fair to say?
Senator, I'm not familiar with the Instagram account specifically that you're referencing, but we do know that people expected and hoped from the platforms that we would help them get accurate information about COVID during the unprecedented time, especially at the beginning.
Well, isn't there a difference between you as a platform putting forward information and censoring your users at the behest of the White House, the administration more broadly, and the CDC? Isn't there a distinction there?
We specifically wanted to work with public health experts to understand the relationship between information and behavior. And so we did consult with the CDC, the World Health Organization, and others to understand how the platform policies we built were affecting public health.
Well, you didn't just consult with them to understand how they affected public health. You actually censored on their behalf. I mean, you took these emails, I'm just quoting from a sample of them, which, by the way, have been disclosed in litigation. These emails show that you took censorship steps. You took down accounts. You planned misinformation policies. You adjusted your policies at the behest of the United States government. I mean, that's not just some theoretical thing. That's actually targeting your user's speech. But I appreciate your forthrightness, by the way. But you're saying you think that's fine, and that was your policy.
Senator, we've been public about our policies on COVID misinformation specifically, as well as on misinformation generally.
And so you think you're not concerned about any of this? Nothing that I just read to you, you're not concerned about it at all?
Respectfully, Senator, I think the balance of how to protect free expression as well as public safety is a difficult issue. But it's one we're committed to working with outside experts and publishing our work.
Well, I appreciate you being so forthright. As I said, this is actually from litigation between the state of Missouri and the state of Louisiana and the federal government. I anticipate that your remarks under oath today are going to be very interesting and helpful to that litigation. I'll just say this. My view is that the United States government is bound by the First Amendment. They cannot encourage or coerce or incite or collude with a private party to get around the First Amendment, but you've just said to me today that that's basically what they did, that you coordinated with them repeatedly over a pattern of months and years to adjust and target your speech policies for protected speech at the behest of the United States government. I have to tell you, I've got a big problem with that, and I think all your users should too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We must remember that the head of Facebook contributed $300 million I think in one of the packs, I believe, to do advertising against Trump. But Trump never took concerted effort against those social networks either during his 4 years as president. So that left a little bit to be desired from his part. Now, Josh Hawley was interviewed by Laura Ingraham. This is sort of a good overall conclusion about some of his quizzing of these people, whether it's TikTok or Facebook and so forth. But Josh Hawley is a fine, upright man from Missouri, senator from Missouri. But here's that interview that Ingraham had with Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley.
This week we've seen two more examples about how big tech and other big corporations are catering to the political left at every turn. Now, remember on Monday we told you about how quickly credit card companies fell in line after Democrats lobbied that they track gun purchases separately. And speaking of tracking, this week at multiple Senate hearings, we learned that Twitter has the capability not only to track individual users, but shut them down if need be.
You were an engineer at Twitter, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
Yesterday, Mr. Zatko testified to another committee I sit on that 4,000 engineers at Twitter had access to all of the personal information, user data, geolocations of Twitter users. Is that accurate?
So I'd never met him, and he joined the company after I left, so I don't know if that particular claim is accurate.
Did you have access to user data?
Well, I was the head of engineering for the whole company.
Did you have access to user data? I'm looking for a yes or a no. Just remind you.
No. I think I could have gotten it.
Oh, okay. Well, if you can get it, that's what we call access. So you did have access to user data. Is that a yes?
In theory, I probably could have, yeah. That's probably right.
Okay. That was devastating. Joining me now is a man you just saw, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. Senator, what were these engineers doing with this data, and why did it take you about four questions to get him to say the obvious? They had access to user data.
They had access. 4,000 of them have access, Laura, and what they're doing with it is whatever the heck they want. And here's the really, really chilling thing, is the whistleblower told me under oath that he believes that Twitter engineers have doxed users before. You know, taking their personal information, put it out there in the public. He thinks that it's very possible that Twitter engineers have gotten into people's accounts and altered stuff in the account. Your record of tweets, maybe even tweeted out under your name, under the user's name. It's absolutely unbelievable. And here's the thing. We know that these companies are far left companies. The employees are overwhelmingly leftist. We know that they love to censor. And here we have real world proof that literally thousands of left wing Twitter employees can hack accounts and do whatever they want anytime they want.
You referenced that former security chief turned whistleblower, that guy Peter Zatko, Senator. Here's something else he said during the testimony that was earlier this week.
The corporate security, physical security team had been contacted and told that there was at least one agent of the MSS, which is one of China's intelligence services, on the payroll inside Twitter. If you are not placing foreign agents inside Twitter, because it's very difficult to detect them, it is very valuable to a foreign agent to be inside there. As a foreign intelligence company, you're most likely not doing your job.
Senator, what are the chances right now that China is operating in some capacity within these social media companies, including Twitter?
Very high. I mean, it sounds like almost 100% based on what the whistleblower testified to. And, you know, listen, I mean, there's a reason that they want to get access. It's because the data is so easy. It is so easy to get Americans' personal information. But here's the other thing I'm worried about, Laura. Our own government wants to control these companies, and they don't even have to ask very, very hard. The companies are willing to turn over the keys of the kingdom to the Biden administration. Who was first on the list for the Biden administration to go to talk about censorship with their unconstitutional disinformation board? Twitter. First on the list. Who are we going to go meet with? Twitter. We also know that Facebook now sat down with the Biden administration and actually took down accounts based on what Biden's team was telling them to do. You know, can we take this account down? And Facebook says, oh, yes, we can. We have the emails for it. So these are censorship machines, and they're being manipulated every which way, including, unfortunately, by this administration.
Yeah, well, they're proxy censors for the government, which is why when you all get power back, and we hope that's very soon, rather than a lot of all of us, you know, putting out our hot air on this, actually something has to be done, Senator. And that's what I think that people are expecting when you all take power. I know you agree with that. Speaking of something you just said, and this is kind of related, TikTok's COO, Vanessa Pappas, also testified on the Hill this week and made an admission about some of the employees' locations. Watch this.
We do have employees based in China. We also have very strict access controls around the type of data that they can access and where that data is stored, which is here in the United States. And we've also said under no circumstances would we give that data to China. Our final agreement with the U.S. government will satisfy all national security concerns.
Senator, a lot of people's breath was just taken away by that admission, so we're supposed to feel good about this because they were all going to be separate, right? TikTok, separate ownership. We don't have to worry about China. Mike Pompeo disagrees.
Listen, I totally disagree. Here's the truth of the matter. TikTok has Chinese employees who have access to U.S. user data, and they're doing nothing to stop it. And by the way, they employ members of the Chinese Communist Party who have access to user data, which that same witness testified under oath to earlier this week. So the bottom line here is whether we're talking about TikTok or Twitter or Facebook, you can be sure that if you're on those services, your information is probably getting reviewed by some foreign government and is also probably getting reviewed by this government, by the U.S. government. And whenever the Biden administration wants them to censor, they're going to. Whenever China wants to get a hold of your data, they can.
Senator, thank you for staying on this and for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
When governments violate constitutional rights, they act in criminal ways, and that's what's going on right now. We've got a couple of clips from DW News about the counteroffensive that the Ukraine launched against the Russians, and then also they're going to give us some what's next, what's Putin's next move. And then we're going to have a Sky News about a three-minute synopsis there of what they think is going to happen over there. Then we're going to Jay Dyer. He's going to talk about the geopolitical British power system. So here we go with a couple of clips from DW and then one from Sky News, and then Jay Dyer finishes it up. Here we go next.
So Ukraine was able to force thousands of Russian troops out of the Kharkiv region in a matter of days. But along the border with Russia, the shelling continues unabated. DW's Nick Connolly has been to meet people rebuilding their lives to the sound of artillery fire.
Less than a week ago, this was a journey best made in a tank. Now, just an hour's drive separates Kharkiv with its restaurants and metro from villages just emerging from 6 months of occupation. Here, within sight of the border, the outnumbered Russian army held on the longest, throwing everything it had at advancing Ukrainian forces. Most of the locals didn't stick around, leaving pets and livestock behind. Svetlana is one of just a handful of residents left on her street. She's been without power and without phone signal for the past 6 months, and as of last week, without a roof.
I came out of the cellar, and after the bang, it seemed like everything was all right. I had to go down again, and when I left, everything was gone. The door, the window, and the roof, all just gone. The blast wave took it straight off. All that's left are my skis.
And it wasn't the first time. After two previous hits, Svetlana was able to patch things up, but not this time. Many of her neighbors had it worse.
A boy next door was killed, and two houses down the road there was a neighbor, a veteran of the Soviet Army. He was sitting in his yard, and out of nowhere a piece of shrapnel hit him in the forehead and killed him. The Russians kept asking me why I didn't leave. I turned it around and asked them why they came in the first place. I've been here for 39 years.
A light sleeper, Svetlana tells us she hopes she'll wake up in time if the ceiling does end up falling down. Like millions of other Ukrainian refugees, Svetlana's daughter and grandson are now in Poland. With her family scattered, she relies on her neighbor Mykhailo for help. But 6 months of occupation have taken their toll on him. As a man of fighting age, Mykhailo was constantly in the sights of the Russian army.
I only left the house during the day. You just have to keep your head down. The first time the Russians picked me up was in April. A few times a month, they would get me in again. I still have the marks from the bullets they shot at my legs. They were obsessed with finding out where my brother was in the military and where his documents were hidden.
Mykhailo says his father was taken away by the Russians in March. Since then, all trace of him has been lost on both sides of the border. This is just some of the shrapnel Svetlana has collected in her living room just in the space of the last few days. With no end in sight to shelling along the border, why not take this chance to get out? She tells us Ukrainian troops offered to take her to Kharkiv in their tank. Her response was simple: not until I've repaired my roof.
For more analysis of the situation on the ground, we are now joined by Marina Myron. She is an honorary research fellow in the Defense Studies Department Center for Military Ethics at King's College in London. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. Now, we've seen impressive gains by the Ukrainian army in the last few days. Can we expect something similar in the near future?
That is correct. We have seen some really impressive offensive capabilities in the north, so in the region of Izum, which is the Kharkiv Oblast, close to Russia's border. However, we're still seeing some difficulties in the south. So essentially, the reason for the success, it was a surprise to the Russian forces, as they have moved their troops to the south, expecting the so-called Kherson offensive. However, they couldn't hold the ground in the north, and the amount of Ukrainian troops deployed for the northern offensive was outnumbering whatever was left there of the Russian forces. So the best they could do was retreat to save manpower. Right now, the question is, that was a tactical game for the Ukrainian military. However, they need to hold that ground. And so it is too early to tell how that will turn out. Yeah. That being said, they have definitely undermined Russia's plans in military tactical sense.
Now, it's interesting that you would say that, especially the last bit, because the Russian President Vladimir Putin just said that the counteroffensive that came as a surprise, as you say, won't change Russia's plans, that Russia has so far not deployed its full forces. And he added, quote, "We aren't in a rush." What do you make of that?
Well, obviously, it was a slap for Russia in a tactical sense, and the whole idea was to be able to surround Slavyansk and Kramatorsk and repeat the Lysychansk scenario. Now, on the ground, they will have to regroup and change their plan, and they're seeing, obviously, the continuous push in the Kherson region, and that is strategically much more important. Obviously, there needs to be kind of some diplomatic exit for Putin in order to keep the morale high of his forces on the ground. And, of course, they are trying to mobilize more forces right now as we speak. However, Kherson is difficult in terms of logistical support to the troops, so it remains to be seen how that plays out.
So, Marina, just briefly, if you would, looking at the other side, the West, can Ukraine handle this offensive or the counteroffensive on its own? Does it need more support from the West, and will it get it?
That's a great question, because obviously the counteroffensive took place now 6 months into the war. The Ukrainian forces have received an enormous amount of help from the West, both in military equipment as well as in training. Yet we have to think about the seasons and about the fact that the winter is approaching, and about Ukrainian economy, which is about to crumble. According to the World Bank, they need $349 billion for recovery of the Ukrainian economy. So on the one hand, they have to sustain that war effort. On the other hand, they will have to provide for the population. Mm-hmm. And we have seen that Russia has been targeting critical infrastructure, and we've seen blackouts throughout the country. So that makes things more complicated. And we have a bigger picture with you know, the Russian gas and oil supplies in Europe. So that money has to come from somewhere, the help that Ukraine needs. And in how far European countries are willing to sacrifice the good of their own citizens to help Ukraine remains to be seen.
That's the big question indeed. Marina Myron, an honorary research fellow in the Defense Studies Department Center for Military Ethics at King's College in London. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to play Sky News. What's next for Putin? And then we're going to finish with Jadar. Okay, here we go next.
As Ukraine liberates more of its territory from Russia, what does this mean for Vladimir Putin?
He could retrench and regroup, building up more defensive positions on land that he currently holds. That might involve retreating from some areas, but it would make it easier to defend, resupply, and possibly attack from the territory that he holds. But his biggest problem is manpower and morale amongst his troops on the battlefield. What can he do about that? How does he replenish those forces too? He could call for a full mobilization, or probably more likely a partial mobilization, because a full mobilization, calling all Russia's young men into the fight, would be politically extremely risky. Even then, a partial mobilization, though, would take some time to retrain his reservists, and he doesn't have much time right now. That is the fear, and Vladimir Putin has made it clear time and again how big and powerful his nuclear arsenal is.
Войска начали поступать первые образцы бронетехники на унифицированных платформах.
Still, using a nuclear weapon is quite the Rubicon to cross, and he would have to feel that he'd exhausted all other options. Russia's nuclear doctrine clearly states that it can only strike first if the security of the state is at risk. Now, the rhetoric that you're hearing increasingly on state TV is that this whole operation is to defend Russia against an aggressive West, an aggressive NATO out to annihilate the Russian state, but still, it is quite a stretch. And there's nothing to say that the use of a tactical nuclear weapon would be the definitive game changer on the battlefield. This is a police state where the security services hold civil society in a straitjacket. It is very difficult to conjure up any form of resistance in Russia right now. You just have to hold up a blank piece of paper and you can be detained. It may well be that there are factions within the elites who aren't that happy with what's going on, but they're keeping a pretty low profile for now. It would seem that the man in the Kremlin is sitting pretty sweet. It's an unlikely scenario, but anything is possible. The question is, who would succeed him? And when many here in politics have grown up in a system where power is secured by the security services, you might just end up getting more of the same. Vladimir Putin has not lost a war that he's been directly involved with during his time in office. Chechnya was eventually brought into submission after a long and brutal campaign. The war in Georgia ended in a matter of days after Georgian forces retreated. And Russia's intervention in Syria to prop up Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad turned the war in his favor, and he's still in office. So will Ukraine buck that trend? Vladimir Putin probably thought that Ukrainian forces might retreat in the way that Georgian forces did. He was wrong about that.
British Power coming up next. Jay Dyer telling it like it is.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And in the wake of the passing of the Queen, I thought it would be very helpful and timely, also given the date, the anniversary of 9/11, to get into the history of imperial geopolitical motivations and subversion. What's the approach that empire has to how they run their colonies and their subjects? And by doing so, we will understand the motivation of the geopolitical minds behind the modern era, people behind the Cold War, people behind the War on Terror, and then where we're going now into the war on so-called viruses and invisible enemies. If we go back to Dr. Carol Quigley's book, The Anglo-American Establishment, he's basically laying out the structure and the approach of these elites in the West, what he calls the Anglo-American power block, to running the world, how they would subvert their main two rivals, the Austro-Hungarian Empire and Russia, to achieve global dominance. And out of that global dominance, how they would then bring about a world socialist Fabian Federation. Now, in the early stages of 20th century, late 1800s, 1900s, there were quite a few people in the British establishment who did not want this plan. They were not leftists. They were not socialists. They were not anything other than just traditionally minded British who wanted the best for their people and what they saw was the British Empire's advantages for civilization and whatnot. However, they eventually fell sway to the influence of certain figures within the British establishment, sometimes called the Cliveden Set, the Astors, and by extension, Cecil Rhodes and the Rockefeller, the Rothschilds. This is the history of the British Empire and how eventually the Bank of England essentially is a front for private banks. And the way that this model of governance works is the original in the modern era shadow government model. So in other words, you have these outer rings and circles that are academics and corporations and media moguls, et cetera. And then you have an inner core that they report back to. And there's an inner core that knows the real long-term plan. And in Quigley's book, amazingly, again, describing things around the turn of the century, you know, from 1890s into the 1900s, he lists the people that were involved in this at that time. Now, it's not exactly the same anymore. The British Empire doesn't exist. This is sort of the last waning phases of the British Empire. But when we look at this, we get a real insight into the skeletal structure and model for how the world government that's coming into power now